Welcome back to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute, a Fan Nation college football podcast. This is a weekly show coming your way, brought to you by KillerFrogs.com. I'm Brett Gibbons, and today I'm joined by fellow Killer Frogs writer and notable Max Duggan enthusiast, Nate Cross. Nate, how are you doing, my guy, today?
I'm doing really well. Excited to talk about this and looking forward to just football in general.
Yeah, for sure. It's right around the corner. We will be wrapped up with the College World Series by the time this is out, which means it is football season. That's the way I see it. We have college baseball and we have college football. Those are my two seasons. Today, we are talking about the coaching carousel. We're talking about coaching changes, maybe some guys in the hot seat for this coming fall. But before we get to that, Nate, since this is your first time on, I want everyone to kind of get to know you. What is your TCU background? Where does your college football fandom come from? And your ties to Killer Frogs?
So I'm a student at TCU currently. I'll be a junior this year, sports broadcasting major with a Spanish minor. I've been a TCU fan my whole life. Grew up watching college football, college baseball, going to all the sports, and continue to do that and follow it more so now than ever. And looking forward to everything else coming with TCU and other teams that coming into the Big 12 as well.
Yeah, and Nate's one of our boots on the ground guys. You're really kind of, you know, knees deep in all the TCU action on campus every day. Of course, not right now because it's summertime, but really excited to have you on. Let's just dive right into it. Let's talk the coaching carousel. And I want to start off with the biggest head coaching moves. There's one that kind of rises above the rest in terms of headlines. I don't necessarily know whether it's the number one best hire, but it definitely dominates headlines. And that is Deion Sanders to Colorado. I'm sure everyone has their thoughts on it, but Nate, how do you think primetime is going to do in his first season? And did you think that was a smart hire for the Buffs?
After seeing Coach Sanders just coach constantly, growing up, he played against my high school, and he's a winner, and he smoked us in state and everything else. And I've seen him coach, and it seems like he gets those players unified, and I think he's going to have a successful first season. Now, whether he's going to have like a perfect season, I don't think so. But I think the Buffs were in good mindset hiring him, because I think he's going to get a lot done short time period, and that's what they need, especially with all these teams on the rise of moving to different conferences and stuff. I think it's in their best interest to get people there, and I mean, you're already seeing revenue go up just because of the name. So I think it's a great hire, and I think they should be looking for to have some success in their first year.
Yeah, success in their first year, hopefully not their first week, because they do play TCU in that opening game. And I think that's kind of why, you know, if you're tuning in these podcasts and you're kind of like, man, am I sick of hearing about Colorado? I promise I won't harp on it all offseason, but do know that is TCU's first opponent of the 2023 season. So we're probably going to be talking about them more than most non-TCU teams here, or non-Big 12 teams, potentially non-Big 12. We'll see. They may come back. Some other ones of note, big ones of note, Nebraska hiring Matt Rhule, a notable coach who turns bad programs around very quickly. We have Wisconsin, who went with Luke Fickell, super successful. Cincinnati took them to the college football playoff, first group five team to ever do so. And Auburn, the man, the myth, the legend, the ever controversial figure, Hugh Freeze, who has experience at Ole Miss in the SEC. Do you have any outstanding thoughts about those kind of tentpole coaching hires this offseason?
I mean, I like every single one of those hires for different reasons of their own. Luke Fickell, I'll start off with that one. I mean, he changed a Cincinnati team that was like kind of like mid-tier, but they ended up being really good. And I think it's going to be a similar like team set, not too big of a school yet, but I think he could definitely change it in years to come, if not this year. Auburn, they have been in a slump here recently, and keeping up with the SEC is definitely a necessity. So, especially with the additions to OU and Texas, they want to get off to a good start coming up here in the next couple years. So I think a coaching change there was needed, and to get a big name like Hugh Freeze is huge for them. And Matt Rhule, we saw him at Baylor. I didn't think he got the chance in the NFL to fully change that team around. And I think you give him a few more years, I think he would have done so. but it was different in the NFL. They're expecting success immediately. And college, I think they know that it may take him a few years, but I think he'll get that program to where it needs to be and back to Big Ten standards for Nebraska. So I think that's a good hire there. And I think the main thing about each one of these hires is they're big names. People want to play for them. And that's going to be a key because they've been lacking with the recruiting, especially Wisconsin and Nebraska. They didn't have the big recruit names. Auburn, they had the recruit names. Now they just got to take it to the next level. And I think they're going to do so here in the next couple years. I'm not going to give it a first year, but I think they'll be good in the next few years.
Yeah, to touch on the Matt Rule in the NFL thing, we've seen it time and time again where great college coaches do not translate in the NFL. Urban Meyer, no matter what you think of him personally, all-time college coach, failed in the NFL. Matt Rule did not work in the NFL. Nick Saban did not work in the NFL. So, you know, there's a difference between the college coaching and the pro coaching. And Matt Rule has a proven success record at Baylor, which, yeah, they've had great teams. They've had great players, but historically not like an all-time program. It's a decently easy place to win, but not the easiest. And then he won 10 games a season at Temple. Talk about a difficult program to win at. And he won there. So it's just a matter of time before Nebraska starts rising. I don't know if maybe, you know, that might be his dream job. I've heard a lot of things about him and Penn State. If James Franklin doesn't work out down the line, but he will have Nebraska winning football games. We are not going to see the Scott Frost repeat. I can almost guarantee that. And Luke Fickell, I have a lot of good Wisconsin fans that are my friends. And they mentioned that Luke Fickell is changing the program and bringing them into the modern era without stripping the tradition of Wisconsin. So I'm really excited to see that. He's teaming up with Phil Longo, who is the North Carolina offensive coordinator. We do not have time to dig into all of the coordinator changes. There were 68 of them this offseason. We just simply don't have the time to talk about all those. We will talk about the notable ones in the Big 12 here soon. But some other head coaching changes I wanted to note, some names. FAU, bringing in Tom Herman. I personally think that's a great hire just because, like you said, it's a name. He gets to live in Boca Raton. He assembled kind of an all-star cast of coordinators and coaches who've had time in the NFL and successful careers in college. Really excited to see what Tom Herman does with the Owls down there. We have Trent Dilfer at UAB, who possibly is on the other end of the spectrum of coaching. I'll get your thoughts on that in a second. And then Louisville bringing in their alum, former quarterback Jeff Brohm, who kind of brought all of Purdue with him. They're just now wearing red instead of gold. So I'm really interested to see what he does there. But do you have any thoughts on Tom Herman, Trent Dilfer? You know, specifically, what do you think of the Trent Dilfer hire?
I think it's an excellent hire, a little under the radar on name. So I think but that's what UAB needed. And I think they don't need an overly large name to be successful. I think they need somebody who's willing to get them like going, because they do play big schools here and there and big conference schools. I mean, so they need somebody that's going to get them ready for those games. And I think he's going to do that, but they're going to have to get the players to work with him. And I think that's going to come.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if that translates, because he just kind of brought his Nashville preparatory coaches with him from high school. I personally don't know if it'll work on the coaching end. I'm very, very skeptical about this hire. But if there is something to kind of take away and be like, oh yeah, maybe it's because he works with the Elite 11 camps, and maybe UAB will bring in, you know, an elite quarterback or two just based on the relationship that he established with them. We'll see. Do you have any other outstanding thoughts on these other hires, or maybe some hires I didn't mention at head coach?
Well, I mean, I love the Tom Herman one, like you mentioned. I think he was a great coach at Texas. I mean, others didn't think so. But, I mean, he turned that program into something that they weren't. And he got them back to where they were with, like, Sam Ellinger and stuff. And, I mean, they were starting to flow. They just didn't give him the chance. And, I mean, if you look at it, they weren't much better, if not even worse, under right now under the circumstances of Sarkisian. So I think Tom Herman is a great coach, and he's and being somewhere smaller like FAU, I think it's a great place for him, and he's a big name, so he's going to get a lot of recruits out of that.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the lone head coaching change in the Big 12. And it, you know, this actually almost slipped past my radar because I don't look at Cincinnati and say that's Big 12. They are this year, starting July 1st. They are part of the Big 12. They did go under a coaching change because Luke Fickell left for Wisconsin. They hired Louisville's Scott Satterfield, the former App State head coach. Did a lot of good in Boone at App State. Brought that program to kind of some real, real relevance there. Won games at Louisville, but it kind of seemed like the entire program was kind of like, yeah, okay, we're kind of done with you. Maybe they realize they're ceiling under him. I don't know if it's the best hire. I think a lot of the reception was kind of, yeah, oh, okay. But, you know, going from Luke Fickell to Scott Satterfield, my opinion, I think, is a bit of a downturn. But what do you think about the Big 12's lone coaching change this year, which is kind of strange for 14 members to only change one?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a little disappointment because I think being the name of Cincinnati, you've been up there constantly in the rankings. You've been up there. You've produced great players, and I think it's a little of a letdown. But I don't think he's not up for the challenge. I think he's ready, and I mean Appalachian State was a nobody, and then they were somebody. So I mean, they're ready, and I think he'll bring in good coaches that can help him, but I just don't think he'll get the recruits that they once did because he's not that big of a name. But I think the coaching part of him is a great, great characteristic that he has, and I think he can change programs. But now whether he needs to change it a lot and whether these players are ready to adapt to him, that's going to be a question that I have.
Of all the coaching changes, the head coaching changes, I should specify, this offseason, which one is going to make the biggest difference for their team? And the only stipulation is we can't say Deion Sanders. Do you have somebody else in mind? Indifference could be good or bad. This could be, I think he's going to take them new levels, or wow, do they whiff on that?
I'm going to say Matt Rhule. And I think it's the best hire out of all of these because he's notably a good coach. He's produced great assistant coaches as well. And he's got to take credit for all of that. And I mean, there's been some great players under him. And I mean, he's just a great coach and he knows how to gear his players quickly. And I think Nebraska needed something quick because they just did not have it and they have not had it for a long time. And they have what they need to be successful, especially the environment. So I think they needed something quick, and I think he will be a quick solution.
I agree with you. I think Matt Rhule was top to bottom the best coaching hire this offseason. Nebraska, it's a big program with a lot of money, so it's great to see them bring it in. Now, to be clear, I did say that's not going to be a Scott Frost-esque failure. When Nebraska wins 3 or 4 games this year, please do not tweet me and saying, well, you said he was going to be good. Matt Rhule's a 2-year turnaround. Go back and look at every place that he's been at. He won 3 games his first year at Baylor, and then he also won a Big 12 championship with them. So, you know, took them to the Big 12 championship. I don't believe he won it. They lost to Oklahoma. So, but 2 years. Give him 2 years to be 7-8 games and competing in, well, the divisionless Big Ten, whatever they choose to rebrand as moving forward in 2024. So that's the rundown of the head coaches here. There's always a lot of change, a lot less change this year than we saw last year with the dramatic sweeps of Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly. We didn't quite get that this year, but I think top to bottom, there was a lot of correct hires made it, and you know, we'll figure that out as time goes. I wanted to run through coordinator changes because I said there's 68 of them. That's way too damn many to be talking about. So let's just talk about the Big 12 ones. Surprisingly, there weren't a lot. Iowa State, new offensive coordinator, Nate Steelchase. He was their wide receivers and running backs coach. The Athletic tagged him a rising star in the industry. So we'll see how that goes. I'll get your thoughts on TCU here in a minute. I have some thoughts too. They bring in Kendall Briles from Arkansas. Yes, that Briles. West Virginia offensive coordinator Chad Scott was the running backs coach, a longtime Neil Brown assistant. Sure. Baylor, brand new defensive coordinator. They slipped on defense a little bit last year after having a top 20 defense in 3 of the past 4 years before that. They bring in Matt Prolidge, who was their safeties coach and was Oregon's co-defensive coordinator last year. And Oklahoma State, this may be a name you're not familiar with. It's a name I'm not familiar with. New defensive coordinator Brian Nardo. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, comes from Gannon University. That is a D2 school. Let's just start with it. Let's start with the TCU offensive coordinator, Kendall Briles. He's calling the plays in Fort Worth now. We'll try. It's impossible to have a conversation about him without bringing up his dad and Baylor and everything that happened there, but let's try. Let's try to remove that. Just as an on-the-field play caller, what do you think?
I mean, he's been known to change some players around, especially quarterbacks. And I think that's what TCU needs right now, especially once Max Duggan left, you're going to find a new quarterback now, whether it be Chandler Morris or somebody else. I mean, you're going to need somebody who can mentor this young quarterback into somebody who they can be, their full potential. Now, whether I think it was the best hire, I don't know. But I do think he's been able to, I mean, he did great job at Baylor, whether it was quote on his dad or, I mean, he knows what he's talking about, and his dad and other people have taught him what he needs to know about football in the game. And I feel like he's ready for TCU, and with the help of Sonny Dykes, who is huge offensive mind, I think they will coordinate well together and be able to turn this program back to where they need to be after having a very successful year and get them back in gear, especially with the talent that they had coming in.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see, you know, we've talked about it a lot that the offense was definitely last year was definitely a marriage between Sonny Dykes and Garrett Riley. And from the sounds of it, it was a little bit more Garrett Riley, but maybe like 60-40. Like it was a pretty even split there. And, you know, they brought Briles in for a reason. And when we say it may not be the best hire, I think it actually kind of hurt TCU to be in the college football playoff in the terms of, you know, losing the offensive coordinator, because most everybody had already moved and was in place by then. Clemson decided to give the absolute bag to Garrett Riley to bring him in. I'm really interested to see, especially at Clemson, who was awful offensively the past two seasons and has this young superstar quarterback budding in a Cade Klubnik. I'm really interested to see if Garrett Riley is the conductor of the train, or if it was really that perfect marriage between Sonny Dykes and Garrett Riley. And I think bringing in Kendall Briles to TCU and sending Garrett Riley off to Clemson is going to be a really big indicator on what that is. So I'm interested to see. He has proven results at Arkansas. They scored 1.5 million points. KJ Jefferson, fantastic quarterback. I don't think TCU has anybody on the roster quite the same physique or skill set as Jefferson, but you know, if it is Chandler Morris, he can run. He's not quite the 6'3", 240, 50-pound bruising body that Jefferson is, but yeah, they certainly could have done worse.
Yeah, and I mean, they got some good talent coming in that they could be looking at to mentor as well, such as Haas Haney from Aledo, who could be a quarterback candidate in the future for the Frogs. He's got a lot of talent there. And I mean, you mentioned that they don't quite have the physique that like KJ Jefferson has, but like Haas Haney has a similar physique to him, likes the running game, physical athlete, and likes to throw the ball really deep downfield. And I mean, I think in the future, they're looking in the long term, who can stay long term for the Frogs. And I think it's a decent hire, and I think Coach Kaz also have played a part in this, and he knows what Briles' potential is as well. So I think it's a okay hire for the Frogs.
In terms of X's and O's, that's about what I'll say there as well. Yeah, we'll leave the other discussion to offline or Twitter. But I did kind of bring up that TCU was kind of out of luck because they lost Garrett Riley after the college football playoff, and a lot of the other teams that had traded offensive coordinators had kind of already done their thing. Now, we see it every year. Coaches leave as late as March, April. I've seen Utah State lost one of their offensive coaches to the NFL after their spring game. So we all talk about, well, the transfer portal, it's nice that they have windows, but it's kind of the Wild West. Well, it's not really fair that these kids can kind of leave whenever. But here there are coaches leaving whenever they want. leaving mid-season, leaving a day after the season, deciding they're going to leave 2 weeks before the end of the season and, you know, playing it out to nothing. So my question for you is, do you think that there should be hiring windows for coaches just like we've implemented on the transfer portal?
That's a hard one for me, because I get that these coaches want to get settled in and get the first dibs on players and stuff. But, I mean, you're leaving teams behind that you've been loyal to, and they've been loyal to you, and you're asking them to put the workload that they put in all season, and they look and kind of see traitor. And, I mean, like, you just see it in baseball, all sports. They leave before they, like, have potential, and some of these teams even have potential in playoffs before they, like they start interviewing. I think that teams shouldn't be allowed to start talking to these coaches until at least they are out of contention. Because I feel like coaches turn, and I kind of feel like that's kind of what happened with TCU's last offensive coordinator. I feel like he already knew that he was out the door, and he kind of not sold the championship, but he cared a lot less than what he could have. And I think that put a lot of stress on the team and Coach Dykes. And I feel like there should be a window that they should be allowed to talk and accept positions, because I feel like teams would be better off that way.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I'm a big proponent of the transfer portal. I think it's a good thing. I think it needs a lot of safety nets and a lot of rules on it to make sure that it's a little bit more structured and less kind of wild westy. But one of the big reasons that's often overlooked as to why players hit the transfer portal is because their coaches leave, whether it be their position coach, or it doesn't even have to be their position coach or coordinator or head coach. It could be the guy that recruited them there. Sometimes the defensive line coach is the director of recruiting at some of these smaller schools like Bowling Green or like Texas State or something like that. And when they leave, all of a sudden the player's connection to that team is kind of like, well, shoot, he brought me here. And sometimes they follow them and sometimes they don't. But I kind of think this no bars handle on the coaching carousel, I almost think is more detrimental to teams than the transfer portal ever could be. Even if there were no bars on it, and a quarterback could leave after week three to go play for Alabama. It really does destroy these teams when they leave. I think that there should be windows. I like what you said about, maybe there's a no tampering deal until like the season is absolutely definitively over. Clearly, Garrett Riley was having conversations with Clemson before he left because he didn't. He basically moved overnight after the national championship game. They didn't talk to him at 3 a.m. That offer was already on the table. He was having conversation with them, which, in my opinion, is wrong. And like you said, he may have given up on the team and not coached to his fullest potential in the championship game. Well, that sucks. So, yeah, I would like to see some implementation, some windows, some sort of bars on it where coaches aren't just, you know, don't leave after the spring game. I get it, the NFL. I totally get it. It's money, you know. Provide for your family, do what's best for you, but leaving kids after spring is just wrong. Okay, last thing here I wanted to wrap up with. Coaches on the hot seat. There's some names, specifically in the Big 12, that I want to talk about. Number one, Neil Brown, West Virginia. He's a 22-25 record since taking the job in 2019. He's had one singular winning season, that was 2020. They only played 10 games, 6-4. Fans, I went to a West Virginia game last year, went to Baylor at West Virginia, and fans were already done with him. And that was like week 7 of last year. And somehow he made it through the offseason. He has no excuse for his coordinator hire. I know it's his buddy. I know it's his longtime assistant, but like maybe it'll work out. I don't know. I thought that was a pretty bad coordinator hire, especially for a place as big as West Virginia. Neil Brown's been in the Big 12 for a little while. West Virginia's actually beaten up on TCU a couple of times. They seem to kind of play a style of ball that just doesn't, TCU doesn't defend well. What are your thoughts on Neil Brown, West Virginia? Could you see him going at all this year?
Yeah, he better hope that he has a great season, or at least a winning season, because I feel that his time's running out, and it's running out quick. And I think you could even see them take strip duties from him even early in the season if things start going wrong, if not fire. because West Virginia is a team that has been up to their full potential, especially when TCU was in the Trevon Boykin days and stuff. They always gave TCU some hectic mess, and they always had TCU's number. And TCU's always struggled, like you said, especially defensively. But I think the coordinator hire was not a good hire, and I think it was kind of out of desperation. And I think they kind of started late with the hiring process, probably. And I think he had to settle for one of his good friends. And yeah, that could work. I mean, if he thinks he could take it by the reins and tell his friend what to do, or his friend's going to just do what he wants to do. But I just don't see it working, especially long term. But if he could get a year of success and hold on to his position, he can do whatever after that, probably. Yeah, but I see him being a future gone.
Yeah, I think I could see him being the first coach gone this year. I don't think he'll make it to week eight. I just don't see it. They don't have the roster. They don't have the talent. They play a difficult schedule. You know, Texas and OU still in the conference, so they have to compete with that kind of stuff. And what I thought was really interesting was West Virginia underwent an athletic director change. They did it after the season, and everyone was like, okay, well, Neil Brown's gone too. And then, no, somehow he pleaded his case to the new guy and is still there for a year. But yeah, I think if I had to put my money down on who would be the first coach out, I would probably put a nice lump sum on Neil Brown. The other one I wanted to bring up is probably contentious. I may be standing alone on an island. There's going to be some people that are very angry hearing this, but I kind of think Matt Campbell might. They need to think about it. They've been ranked in the AP poll three times in the preseason, and they finished outside that top 25 twice in those three seasons where they were, you know, preseason top 25. They did not finish in the top 25 but once, and that was in 2020 where they finished ninth. And they had, you know, Brock Purdy, they had Breece Hall, they had a good team. Will McDonald's on that team, they had a good team. All you have to do is look at 2021, realize they started 17 AP poll, they finished 7-6. Then they go 3-9 last year. I get it. There's some outstanding circumstances. They turned over an entire roster. And Matt Campbell's kind of that name where everyone's like, oh, he's the next big hire at the next big place. But he never seems to be. And he never actually seems to be in the conversation. I kind of wonder if Iowa State falls on their face this year, which I don't think they will. I think they're going to be okay. Does he go? Is that wrong of me to say? What are your thoughts?
I think you're in the right mindset here, with especially Matt Campbell, because the hire I don't think did him any justice. I think it's an okay hire. I don't think it's the worst hire with the offensive coordinator, but I don't think he's gonna get him to where he needs to be, and especially with the talent they've had, such as Xavier Hutchinson, and even their quarterback, he was up there in the top throwing percentage in the Big 12. I mean, what more do you ask of your players when they're putting up the numbers and you're just not getting the results? And I think after that loss at TCU at home, I mean, yes, TCU was on a roll, but they absolutely got obliterated, and that's just embarrassing. And I think that put them on a standpoint where, like, your offense is not where it should be.
No, not at all. And I hope that it is. Again, there's a lot of The Athletic, ESPN are kind of calling Nate Steelchase kind of an up-and-comer. But I don't know. It's kind of like the Cincinnati hire for me. A lot of people are just kind of like, yeah, okay, I guess. A couple of names nationally before we wrap up here. Tom Allen at Indiana. The dude took a pay cut just to stay employed after last season. He has finished 6-18 in the last 2 years. I'm looking at Justin Wilcox at Cal. Cal's a tough place to win. Not a lot of people have done it. Unfortunately, they still cycle through head coaches. And Eli Drinkwitz at Mizzou, they have a ton of recruiting classes they have stacked together. They have serious talent, especially at wide receiver. Luther Burden, like, they have a lot of talent. They're just not winning ball games. Do you have any other names or thoughts nationally on some of the coaches who we may see early exit this year?
I mean, I like all the ones that you put right there, although I really like Eli from Mizzou. I really like him, and I've liked what he's put together in the program, but he's just in a tough SEC. And I think, yeah, you're going to be on the hot seat when you can't put together good seasons. I know a lot of people aren't going to like this, but I think, I hate saying it, But I know OU's head coach is going into his second season, but I think OU had a disappointment and they went backwards. And I think the whole coaching staff at OU should be at least aware that they're not where OU standard should be. And going into the SEC, that could be a problem. And I think they could definitely be looking for somebody else and somebody new as of next year or the year after if this doesn't pan out well this year.
Yeah, I Brent Venables knows where that program needs to be. He came from Clemson. He knows what it takes to win. I kind of think that they shouldn't have the talent. A lot of that talent left and went to USC. They were kind of stuck with the bare bones roster. That defense was disgusting. I don't know how it's not Alex Grinch anymore. He's over at he's over at USC. I don't know. He's employed either. But it was just a tough showing because they didn't have the guys to run the defense that Venables wanted to run. I fully expect a turnaround from them. A lot of TCU fans are probably going to be kind of angry at that. A lot of people listening are probably going to be like, oh, stop. I think they're going to be fine this year. But I agree, especially, thinking 25, 26. If Oklahoma goes into the SEC and Nebraska's it and just loses, Venables may not be sticking around too long there. So I really appreciate your thoughts there. And thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute College Football Podcast. Find us at killerfrogs.com on Twitter at killerfrogs. I'm at Road to CFB. Nate, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram. You can find me, which is cross4352. You can also find me on Twitter, which is also in the link on my bio on killerfrogs.com. And you can just also find me on the TCU campus cheering on TCU sports.
If you liked what you heard today, please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever you use. And if you really liked what you heard, drop a review because that's going to be the best way for us to grow and reach more college football fans this fall, this late summer. We are really kicking into gear. It's July. It's football season. Let's go. We're talking football every week from here throughout the end of the year. Check back for next week's episode of the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. I'm Brett Gibbons. That's Nate Cross, and we'll catch you all next time.